Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Yes, indeed. Hello, folks. My name is Lynn, and as always, I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone. And as always, I want to welcome my terrific co-hosts, who are Bobby Neer and Robert. Hello, guys.
Howdy.
Hi, Lynn. Hello, everybody.
Hi. And unfortunately, we don't have Dave with us today, but hopefully he'll stop in sooner or later today. But I also want to wish everyone a happy weekend, although I know that Hurricane Irene is causing thousands of people to have a very unhappy weekend, and that's not good. Our thoughts are with all.
And it also gives a reason for people to have hurricane parties going on.
Exactly, that's right. We can have hurricane parties, but our thoughts are with those people going through this ordeal right now, and we hope for a speedy end of this nightmare of a storm. So I hope it was saying good night, Irene, very soon. Okay, today's episode is titled 100 Yards Over the Rim. And I'll turn it over to Robert for the opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
You'll ride up front in this wagon on a trek west. Your itinerary is across the Great Plains over the Rockies to a point in New Mexico. And you'll ride alongside Mr. Cliff Robertson in a strange tale of a handful of American pioneers who made a detour in time and found themselves one afternoon on the fringe of the future. Our story is called 100 Yards Over the Rim, and believe me, it's quite a view.
Yes, it is quite a view. 100 Yards Over the Rim takes place in the year 1847, and a man named Chris Horn is leading a wagon train from Ohio through the desert to California. And as he's been told, it's the promised land. But during their journey, which has lasted 11 months, the men and women have suffered from exposure to heat, a dwindling food and water supply, and attacks by the Indians. And Chris's own 8-year-old son is dying of pneumonia. And so some of the folks, they want to turn back, but Chris tells them they'll never make it back alive. So in desperation, he takes a walk over a rim about 100 yards away to search for water. But once he crosses over the rim, he finds himself transported back into the future to 1961. Before being mowed down by a truck that he refers to as a monster, Chris wanders into Joe and Mary Lou's Air Flight Cafe, where he discovers some of this new world that he's just walked into. A doctor introduces him to penicillin, and he's told that there's a natural spring not far from the cafe. And while the doctor believes that Chris is suffering from a delusion of the purest form, Chris discovers in a book or I guess an encyclopedia of some kind that his son lives to become a renowned doctor. It was an encyclopedia, wasn't it, Robert?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a, yeah.
It was.
Yeah, and he's become a renowned doctor. And but then he finds out that Mary Lou or Joe or the doctor have called the authorities. So Chris makes a break for it and races back to where he came from with the police in hot pursuit. Chris then crosses back over the rim and again finds himself back in 1847 with the wagon train waiting for him. They tell him he's only been gone for a few short minutes, but he hands a bottle of the penicillin he brought with him to his wife and says, "Give this to our son." He also tells them all that there's a wonderful world waiting for them out there. So back in 1961, Joe brings the rifle that Chris dropped to the ground back to the diner, and this rifle that at first looked brand new to Joe has now aged 100 years. Okay, so now, as we've seen with some other Twilight Zone time travel episodes, such as The Trouble with Templeton and Back There, once again, there is no real rhyme, reason, explanation for why the person traveled back through time. The main character simply walks through a door or over a rim and is miraculously transported to another time and place. However, this is the Twilight Zone, which means that suspension of disbelief and literary license are the norm. Now, Cliff Robertson, he did a wonderful job portraying wagon leader Christian Horn, a strong and very willful man, I might say, who was thrown into a very bewildering situation. He encounters a world of unfamiliarity, and he handles it much more calmly than most people would, especially when he sees a gigantic truck barreling down the road towards him. Trucks, jukeboxes, and modern-day medicine, they're all foreign to him, and they're foreign to the world in which he lives. But yet his curiosity and his determination, which I believe is a very stoic determination, lead him on to find some help for his dying son. So he overcomes his fear of the unknown. Now, John Astin, he plays the role of Charlie, who is Christian's friend and supporter and fellow traveler. Looks like he's probably his best friend. And as we all know, John Astin went on to play the eccentric Gomez Adams in the classic sitcom, The Addams Family. But he was also known for his fine work as a serious actor, or a serious character actor, I should say. In fact, all of the acting was very impressive. However, I thought the role of Mary Lou was played just a bit too ditzy. There was the woman, Evans, who played Mary Lou. Oh, she drove me crazy. She tended to Christian's arm when he first walked into the diner, tended to his arm. He accidentally sort of shot himself, and she talked like an airhead. No, which was especially noticeable at the end when she kept asking questions with an almost childlike tone in her voice. You know, why, Joe? What happened, Joe? Where did he go, Joe? You know, I just wanted to smack her and say, will you shut the hell up? I mean, come on. You know, why, Joe? You know, and this was a woman named Evans. That was her real name. Or I don't know, real name or stage name. But she's still around. She's 75 years old, and she's still around. But two very memorable aspects of this episode are the excellent musical score by Fred Steiner and the realism of the settings. Now, the musical score was both, to me, I thought it was both subtle at times and powerful during the climactic scenes, and that was perfect for this episode. You know, you had the hot, barren desert, and that had the audience feeling the despair and the discouragement of the travelers who were enduring the heat, the Indian tax, and the diner was a great replica of a small town 60s diner. And although the signs advertising a slice of pie for 15 cents and 20 cents if you wanted the a la mode would make many of us long for the good old days when you didn't have to go broke eating out, I'm sure Christian Horn or anyone else from AD47 would probably still consider that incredibly expensive for pie. So, you know, and there's one other thing that, I have to bring up. And I think Robert will probably remember this. And I think anyone who's a baby boomer will remember this. Remember back in 1969, there was a group called Zager and Evans. Do you remember them, Robert?
Name's not familiar.
Well, maybe you'll remember this. In the year 2525,
oh, yeah. Okay.
If man is still alive, if woman can't survive, they may find. In the year 3535, ain't gonna need to tell the truth, tell no lies. Everything you think, do, and say is in the pill you took today. Remember that?
All I can say, Lynn, is...
Why?
All right, just for that. In the year 4545, ain't gonna need your teeth, won't need your eyes. You won't need a thing to chew, and nobody's gonna look at you. Oh, oh. And that is what the future says is going to happen. But anyway, well, that's what Zager and Evans said is going to happen. Anyway, I enjoyed this episode. I wouldn't call it a classic. As I mentioned, you know, we once again see a travel story with no explanation for the travel And I believe that it was the love that Christian had for his son and the need to save his life that willed him into the future. And that's what we're supposed to believe with this episode. It was just the will that he had for his son to live. So in any case, I enjoyed it. A lot of great acting, except for Mary Lou. And a worthwhile story to me. So I gave it a 3 rating for good. And I'm going to turn it over to you. And if you want to sing the last few verses of that song, you can. Thanks, Robert.
This is what's going on in Lynn's mind. Wind chime. So peaceful.
In the year 55.
Why?
Why?
Well, while Lynn tries to compose herself, I'll go ahead and give my review here. Anyway, if you listen to my past reviews, I've mentioned how I enjoy time travel episodes, and this one's no exception. This one was a very basic one, though, because Kristen was able to get to our time, or 61, and this is what I kind of said it was either one or two ways, and I kind of had this discussion on our site, which is, one is, it was a rip through time where Christian, he was in his time, and then he crosses over into the 1960s through a rip in time, and that's always been one of the theories. If you watch a lot of these time travel movies, Star Trek or any of them, they always talk about a tear in time or whatever. The other one, of course, is a parallel Earth, you know, that we see from Sliders
parallel universe.
But with those two I picked, it was more of a rip through time because there again, if it was a parallel universe, if he came back, he would have either not made it to his original time, or he would have gone back through time of the parallel Earth he was on. So it's just much easier to believe that, well, you know, he crossed, like Glenn said, a doorway, a rip through time is another way we call it. But two things did kind of bother me when watching this. And Lynn brought up about the encyclopedia when he found his son's name. Now, my question is, if he was gone and never made it back, would his son's name still be in the encyclopedia? And that kind of goes against what other shows and movies and talked about, that once you are no longer in that reality, that the old Back to Future situation where, you know, the picture disappears. I'll bring that clip up here in a moment.
In this house, see anybody or talk to anybody. Anything you do could have serious repercussions on future events. Do you understand?
Yeah, sure.
Marty, you interacting with anybody else today besides me?
I might have sort of bumped into my parents.
Great Scott! Let me see that photograph again of your brother. Just as I thought. This proves my theory. Look at your brother.
His head's gone. It's like he's been erased.
Erased from existence.
That was kind of a thing that did bother me. The second and the minor thing was at the end where Kristen talks about the future and a highway. First of all, how would he know it was a highway? Was he tutored during that time he was at the cafe? Because it seemed that he was gone, it wasn't a matter of days, but maybe a matter of hours, because I thought of that too.
How could he have known that it was called a highway? There was nothing called a highway in 1847.
Right. When he came back, and John Astin's character, Charlie, said, well, where have you been? It was only just minutes or even seconds that he was gone. So
yeah. And he said there are highways. Joe and Mary Lou never said highway to him at all.
Right. So that may be just an error on their part.
Oh, of course. Yeah, it was a goof.
Yeah. As I said, there's been other shows and movies about time travel. Especially the ones connected with H.G. Wells and his time travels. I also would have loved to have seen John Astin go with him instead of just Kristen going over there. I would like seeing Charlie characters go over with him as well.
That would have been cool to see more than one
of
them. And they could both come back and corroborate it.
And also see a little more John Astin, because very underused in this episode. So, very much. One of the things I wanted to bring up, and I don't have the clip for this one because I found the opening for it, but I couldn't get a clip. It was the Irwin Allen's Time Travelers. It was a possible pilot for a series that was created by Rod Serling. And unfortunately, it was never picked up by the networks. But do you remember Time Travelers, where these two guys walk through this doorway into the 1900s?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like that. It used to air a lot when I was a kid. No,
yeah, it didn't last very long.
Well, I mean, it was a pilot, so they never made the series. It was an only one-time thing.
Yes,
but
I mean, it's like something that they put out there, and nobody picked it up.
Right. They ran it, like, you know, on Saturday matinee type things and stuff like that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So that's how I remembered it.
You remember Tommy at all?
No.
You don't? Wow.
No. Nope. Never heard of it.
It had possibilities there. And being created by Rod Serling, it's kind of interesting that it would have been another series for him. I don't know if he would have continually worked on it. It was just created by him, but I would imagine he probably would have put in some of the writings like he did for The Twilight Zone if it was picked up. Another one is a Star Trek one called Tomorrow's Yesterday, where we have Captain Christopher, I believe it was a captain. The Enterprise is not back in time, and he's a jet air pilot, and he's picking up by the Enterprise by the tractor beam, but the tractor beam is too strong for a ship, so they had to beam him up. And there was one scene in that one, the Enterprise being back in the 60s, was where he tries to escape, but he's not successful, and they talk about his life and about him staying aboard the Enterprise, but Spock didn't check the records far enough to find out that Christopher does have a son who is important, because I think he starts the Mars run or something like that, or he was of some importance, so they had to put him back in his original time. There was that one. And also another one I was thinking of was Assignment Earth with Robert Lansing and Terry Garr, and I do have a clip for that one.
Hi, I'm George Takei. I'd like to welcome you to Volume 2.9 of Star Trek Episodes, released to coincide with the 30th anniversary of our show. If Star Trek were to be canceled, Gene Roddenberry had decided he wanted something to continue working on. Assignment Earth is essentially a pilot episode for a spin-off series about the guest characters in this show. Gary Seven, played by Robert Lansing, and Roberta Lincoln, played by Terry Garr. As Gene had met with success by describing Star Trek as Wagon Train to the Stars, he described this show as Have Gun Will Travel in Space. In essence, this new show would be set on contemporary Earth and feature Gary and Roberta helping mankind through difficult problems. In some respects, it would have been a 1960s version of The X-Files. Unfortunately, the network passed on the idea. However, Star Trek was renewed, and we began to look forward to season 3.
All right. Agents are male and female, descendants of human ancestors taken from Earth approximately 6,000 years ago, and the product of generations of training for this mission. Problem: Earth technology and science has progressed faster than political and social knowledge. Purpose of mission: to prevent Earth civilization from destroying itself before it can mature into a peaceful society.
And we have that where Spock and Kirk comes down and tries to prevent him from destroying a rocket that is going into thermonuclear type situation.
Oh, okay,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, Earth was too far advanced for that sort of technology, so he was sent back to destroy it, and Spock and Kirk don't know all the, you know, information going on there, so they try to stop him. But that, yeah, that was a possible pilot that never quite worked out. It was the last episode of season two, and because of the mail writing campaign that was started, which saved Star Trek and gave him a season three.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
My last one that I got, I was kind of hoping that Dave was going to come on, but he didn't make it, unfortunately, is Life on Mars. And this is kind of an interesting series. It was on BBC, ran one series, I think six episodes, I'm not quite sure. And then John Sims, who played Sam Tyler, left the series, and then it was picked up on Ashes to Ashes, where it's set in the 80s instead of being set in the 70s. But here is the trailer for Life on Mars.
My name is Sam Tyler, DCI Sam Tyler. That much I do know. The rest is anyone's guess. Because one minute I was in 2006, the next I'm in 1973. So the question now is, what happened? And why am I here?
Yep, yep. Gene Hunt, your DCI, and it's 1973, almost dinner time. I'm having oops.
I was four in 1973, Annie. I need my mobile.
Your mobile what?
They brought it for a reason.
This is my department! What have you done with it?
Life on Mars, new drama for winter on BBC One.
And basically it's about the character Sam Tyler that is hit by a car, and he wakes up in 1973. And the whole thing about the series was it all in his mind, or was he actually transported back to 1973? And the U.S. tried to do a version, their version of Life on Mars, but I think it was canceled after maybe 13 or 14 episodes. Or it may have finished out the first season in the U.S. But it's kind of an interesting series if you hadn't watched her. It's worth a check. So
yeah.
That's pretty much it. I give it a 3 out of 5. So I'll pass it over to Bobby.
Thank you, Robert. Well, I gave it 3 out of 5 too, but for a different reason. I don't really think that much of the episode. It's very, very slow. And it's just not terribly exciting. I know it's not supposed to be, but even so, it just moves at a snail's pace, and it doesn't really go anywhere terribly exciting. I don't dislike it, but it's not an episode that I'd go out of my way to see. The only reason I think probably 2.5 is a better rating for it, a little bit above average. The only reason I pumped it up to a 3, is because it's that rarest of rare events in the Twilight Zone, which is a positive time travel story. Something that you virtually never see in this series. God only knows what Rod Serling would have done without time travel episodes and ideas, but generally, time travel stories in the Twilight Zone are always very negative. They either end very badly, or they involve somebody going back in time, either trying to change history and being unable to do it, or getting greedy or something like that and doing something that causes trouble in one way or another. So it's very, very unusual to see a time travel story in the Twilight Zone that in which that ends in a positive note. So I have to give them credit for that. I'll also give them credit for being different. It's a different kind of time travel story. It doesn't look like all the others. So you deserve some credit for that. But the episode itself is awfully, awfully slow. Now, I bring a little bit of prejudice to this because I personally don't like Cliff Robertson. I never have. I'm not saying he's a bad actor, but he's just too low-key. He may be the most low-key actor ever, and I like my actors with a little bit of an edge to them, and he doesn't have it. And everything I've ever seen him in, he just brings the whole thing down. It just starts to creep along. That's his style of acting. It's served him very well, but I don't really enjoy it.
I don't need the teleprompter. This is the President of the United States. I now demand an immediate retreat of all forces now threatening this great nation. If my demand is not met immediately, I will destroy your ability to function permanently.
Mr. President, the Cuban Theater of Aggression remains mobile. ETA Miami in 4 minutes.
4 minutes. Bring the aiming coordinates for Cuba and Mexico online.
Cuba, 7, 7, 9.
7, 7, 9. I now render this final solution.
Welcome to your very own Map to the Stars. Sure, we all know the big one wiped out the entertainment industry here in L.A., but the glamour and excitement of Hollywood is still alive.
Very funny. Yeah. I hope it was worth it. For now, you are going to die.
Everybody does.
Kill him. And bring me the real unit.
Sir, we're still broadcasting.
Good. Let him watch. Do it.
Lee Marvin, John Wayne, Charles Bronson type. Yeah.
Oh, Charles.
Yeah, but I would call him a little bit more exciting than Cliff Robertson.
But what about Charlie? What about Charlie?
I was going to get to that.
All right.
You jumped ahead of me. See, that's not nice.
I'm sorry.
Charlie was a better vehicle for him because he played a mentally challenged young man, and that required him to be quiet and hesitant and that way. So, by the way, did he win an Oscar for that? I'm not sure. I thought he did, or he was at least nominated.
He was nominated. I don't know if he won, but he was nominated. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, well, that was probably, in my opinion, the best thing he's ever done. But he's a little bit slow. Now, I suppose this episode calls for something like that. If it had been some gung-ho guy who ran across the sand there into the future and demanded help for his son, things like that might have been a little inappropriate for this episode. So he's probably good for it, but I just, every time I see Cliff Robertson, I begin to nod off. And I think to myself, oh, God, this is going to be very long. And that's what happens here. But it's not a bad episode at all. And I do take exception to one thing, if I remember correctly. I think that when he showed up in the diner and he talked to that woman that Lynn hates so much, and she said something about...
I don't hate her, she was just annoying.
She said something about penicillin, and she said, yeah, she got it down at the drugstore or something like that. And you can't get penicillin without a prescription. You can't just get penicillin at the drugstore. You can't buy it like you do with aspirin. So that was that struck me as being a lot. She acted like, yeah, you just get down the drugstore. It's no big deal. Well, it is a big deal. It was a big deal back in the 60s. I ought to know because I was usually sick as a kid, and the doctor usually gave me penicillin. But you had to get a prescription for that. It seemed a little odd to me.
I didn't hate her. She was just annoying, that's all.
Yeah. And Evans is an unusual name, and she doesn't bother me. But you should have mentioned, really, the thing she's best known for. And that is that she was in Bonnie and Clyde, if anybody remembers it like I do.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She played Velma Davis in that, the couple that Bonnie and Clyde pick up and take on a little joyride with them. And they're having a grand old time with Bonnie and Clyde, not knowing who they're riding with.
Yeah, but I forget. Did she do that in there? Why are we doing this, Bonnie? Was it me, Clyde?
And then at some point, I think that... Bonnie is, she's with her fiancé or something like that, or her boyfriend, and she says, what do you do for a living? And he says he's an undertaker. Mm. And that's when they throw them out of the car because Bonnie and Clyde already had a premonition they were going to die. So she didn't need an undertaker in the car. But that the only reason I remember her being in that movie, aside from the fact it's one of my favorite movies, is that rather odd name. Annoying voice, yeah, we see a lot of that. There's a lot of actresses.
Like Unusual Camera.
Yeah,
I was thinking the same thing.
Gene Carson, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You and Robert, you and I just thought of it at the same time. Yeah, Gene Carson, absolutely.
Some of them are fingernails on a blackboard. It can be pretty bad. But like I said, this is a pretty good episode, given the limited amount of time. It's the kind of thing that you really can't go into a whole lot of development of the story because it's only 25 minutes. So given what it is, I just, like I said, I took it from a 2.5 to 3 because I can't remember all the time travel stories while I'm sitting here, but I don't think there's ever any other one that's really positive in any way, that ends positively or with anything really good happening. So this is most unusual. Rod Serling had a rare day that day, when she decided to write a story in which somebody went through the past or the future, and it turned out well. Now, it's called 100 Yards Over the Rim, which is a nice title. But if they had called it 100 Years Over the Rim, they would have seen something much more important in 1947, and that was my birth. So if they had just gone a little bit further, something much more important would have happened, and that's Bob Neer gets born. But they decided to only go 100 years. That's too bad. What? Mm-hmm. What do you mean? Mm-hmm. You should tell me I'm right about that. You agree with that completely.
Yes, absolutely. Totally.
Right.
Now, Cliff Robertson is also in another Twilight Zone episode that Lynn and I both despise, and that's the one with the dummy. What's it called? Is it called The Dummy, Lynn? Is that what it's called?
It's called The Dummy. The dummy.
Yeah, we haven't gotten there yet, I don't think. And
there are very, it's like right down the middle. There are varied opinions on that episode. A lot of people love it. A lot of people hate it. And some are right down the middle where it's, But,
well, at IMDb, 100 Yards Over the Rim gets 8.2, which is really high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and the dummy gets 7.6.
Remember, we just looked today at The Chaser,
yeah.
And it got 7.0. The Chaser got 7.0. So there are people out there that love The Chaser, so. You know, who knows? I don't trust IMDb.
Well, I'm not one of those people that subscribes to the fact that if you like a series, everything is good. As a matter of fact, I'm quite the opposite way. If you like a series and they do something bad, you ought to say so. But I. So like I said, it's a pretty good episode. Cliff Robertson, as usual, he's 86 years old now, and he must be talking slower than ever. It's a pretty frightening talk. The last movie he made was 4 years ago, Spider-Man 3, and that's it, so... He's pretty much retired, and he's just a little bit. I like actors with edge, people who, get mad or.
Charlton Heston.
Oh, I love Charlton Heston. Sure.
Oh my God, don't even say his name.
I know better than to say anything bad against him while you're on the phone. So.
Oh my God.
I'm not looking to kill myself. So.
Yeah, Charlton.
Get your balls off me, you damn stinking
ape. Damn 38.
No, I think it was
damn
38. Damn 38.
Go get him!
Taylor! Why did you run away?
Security police.
I'm in charge of this man.
No longer, madam. He is now in the custody of the Ministry of Science.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
If there is another plague against Egypt, it is by your hand that God will bring it. And you will,
If there is one more plague on Egypt, it is by your word that God will bring it. And there shall be so great a cry throughout the land that you will surely let the people go.
By the way, Robert, have you seen the latest Apes movie? Have you seen it?
No, I've heard about it, about the CGI apes, yeah.
You haven't seen it? Okay.
See it, though.
No, not yet.
Yeah.
All righty. Well,
it's been getting mixed reviews, so.
Yeah, well, I like the first one. Beyond that I didn't get much out of it.
There is no more plague against Egypt. It is by your hand that God will bring it. And there will be so great a scourge across the land that you will surely let my people go. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, that's it.
All right, that's it for me. I'll stay with my three.
There goes Lynn's again. Okay.
I'll stay with my three on this one.
Yeah, I'm staying with my three on this one. I mean, okay. I'm not a big Cliff Robertson fan, but he did okay in this episode, and and Charlie, of course, I remember that. But like I said. In the year 2525, right? I mean, if we were to go back into the future, if we're to go forward into the future, how would we react? He was pretty calm, considering if you and I or anybody went back, 100 years ahead of time and walked into stuff that we didn't even know what it was.
Also, there's one other little odd thing in here. I know he had nothing to lose, but... You can't. How old was this? Did it say how old his son was? What his age was?
8 years old. Yeah.
Well, giving a child an amount of penicillin made for a grown woman is a little dangerous. so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess. But
well, yeah,
nothing
to lose,
but yeah,
but
yeah.
Look, it worked wonder. He was right up there on the front of the wagon pretty quick.
I'm just saying that he wouldn't do it in today's world. You'd be taking quite a chance, too, because dosage is not the same for everybody.
But did you see that? That kid, like, he gave him the penicillin. 5 minutes later, that little shit was sitting up there. He was just sitting up, smiling up the store 5 minutes later. Now, that's some darn good penicillin, I'll tell you. He just sat right up there.
This episode is 50 years old, and 50 years ago, penicillin was thought as a cure-all for everything.
Oh, I know, but my God.
And in fact, it was overused. It was overused to the degree that it's not that effective anymore, and that's the problem with doing that. You got to watch doing that.
Well,
you use it for everything, you're going to get in trouble.
Exactly, but I think they might have wanted you to think that it maybe a day had passed or something, but they didn't give that impression. They gave the impression that he gave his wife the penicillin and said, here, give this to him. This will cure him or whatever. She gives it to him, and it was like less than a minute later, and he's sitting up in the back of that wagon train, and he's sitting there smiling.
Everybody loved penicillin back in the early 60s.
Oh,
and you were
yes.
sick. You went to the doctor and said, give me some penicillin, and that was it. You went on your way, and everybody was happy.
And they keep sitting there like, oh, yeah, let's get going, man. You know, I got to be a doctor in a few years.
Yeah.
Now, if he had marijuana, you know, he'd have been up maybe in about 2 minutes. Who knows? I don't know. It's just insane. It's insane that he was up that quickly.
One of the things I wanted to bring up, if you don't mind, is the gun. And I like the way that they did that because pretty much as he's going through that corridor, the rip of time, as we called it, and he happened to drop it either on the edge of it, because if he dropped it before he crossed over, then there's no way that gun would age that quick, and especially being out there where there's no moisture or anything for, you know, the gun to, you know,
that's
to swell
right.
or unswell and stuff like that. I mean, that gun may not be in that great a shape, but the thing is, the only reason that you can use for it falling apart like that was that maybe it was on that edge, or maybe as he was crossing it he dropped it on where the rip is, thereby aged the gun 100 years. And that's
right,
the one I kind of go with.
Yes, that's right, because he dropped that gun before he went over the ridge. He had to make a choice, grab the gun, or grab the penicillin, because they were chasing him. And he couldn't grab both. He had no chance
right.
of grabbing both. So he said, okay, he's got to grab the penicillin to save his son's life. He left the gun behind. He did not cross over that ridge. So that gun was still in 1961. So how did it age? How did it age? I don't get it. That's good. That's a good point, Robert. How did it age in the time that he dropped it on the ground, went over the ridge? Damn gun was still there. It was still there.
How did you look at that, Bobby? Did you think that it was because he was going through the corridor and dropped it at that point it aged, or how did you feel about that?
I suppose I can't think of any other reason. I don't know. When things like that happen, it's the old suspension of disbelief thing. In order to enjoy an episode, you have to not question too many things. If you start doing that, then it's going to look bad. So when odd things like that happen, I just go, well, it's a TV story. It's fiction, so you can put
on
the same
thing. Well, that's the only thing I can figure.
Doesn't make
any
sense.
That's the only thing I can figure, then. The only thing I can figure is that he was just at the point of crossing over. So, but still, you know what? Just at the point of crossing over. I'm not sure. I still buy that. He wasn't over yet. I don't know.
Don't ask too many questions.
I don't know, Robert. I don't know. I mean, to me, that rifle should not have aged 100 years. He wasn't over there yet.
If you keep asking me questions, I'm going to lower my rating to it, too, so be careful.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, but Robert, was he that close to the rim when he dropped that rifle?
I guess, The thing is, with a rip in time or a corridor or anything, even in movies or TV form, you never actually see the divider line between the two.
Yeah, you never do.
But I mean, like, for example, Sliders, but that's parallel worlds, and you can, you know, see the apparatus open and close. I think there was one for, well, they got this new series starting up called Terra Nova.
Oh, yeah, I heard of that.
I don't know if you guys want to watch that or not. I'm interested in it, where a group of people from the future, or just fed up with the future, decide to go back in time and land, and live during the time of the dinosaurs.
When does that start?
Sometime in September, I think. It should be this fall, but... It's
there hasn't been a successful science fiction story on TV in decades.
I'm just curious how much science that they're taking back, because here again, if you're taking step back to the past, isn't that changing time's history?
Yeah, and that's what I like, the idea of can you change, and they always say you can't. There's no way of changing what has already happened, but it would be interesting. I'll look for that. Terra Nova,
yeah.
All right, I'm going to check it out. I'd like to see that. I'd love to see it.
It has to be better than Dinotopia. Dinotopia.
Dinotopia. All right, in the year 2520. Oh, you guys don't hear them, Mark. Okay.
I'll get those wind chimes out. You better be careful.
Uh-oh. Why? All right.
What's up next, Lynn, for the next show?
I won't torture you people anymore. All right. 2 weeks from now, and that will be September 10th, I do believe.
Yep.
And I always double-check that with my friend Robert here. September 10th?
Yep.
And that will be the Rip Van Winkle Caper. Yes, the Rip Van Winkle.
I'll do my little lurch.
Yes. Oh, actually, I look forward to this one. This is really so much. This is going to be so much fun to talk about. What is wrong with this picture?
Let's point all the facts out. A bunch of people that need
some serious mental help. Okay, this is like people that really need to go into some kind of therapy.
Therapy, definitely.
Oh, yes. I can't wait to talk about this episode. That'll be 2 weeks from now. And that will be on Saturday, September 10th. The Rip Van Winkle Caper, and we will be here, and we hope to see everybody and anybody here that wants to talk about it, too. So I wish all of you a happy weekend, and keep away from Irene. Good night, Irene. I hope it will be a good night, Irene, soon, and just have a wonderful weekend. Everyone, see you soon.
And as the wind charms around mine come to pass, we say goodbye to everybody.
Goodbye.
To Talking Twilight.
Now it's been 10,000 years, man has cried a billion tears for what he never knew. Now man's reign is through, but through eternal night, the twinkling of starlight, so very far away, maybe it's only yesterday. In the year 2525, if man